that offer same-day care for ear, nose, or throat conditions. ENT Now. No appointments necessary. Open 7 to 7 Monday to Friday and Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Walk in or call 314-729-0077 or online at soundhealthservices.com. ENT Now.
Guys don't really talk about antiperspirant. Despite that, 91% of Dove Men Plus Care users recommend it. Here's what they said.
It blocks the, perspiration, I think is the fancy word.
It's comfortable. it smells nice. My girl likes the smell.
It's hard.
I think it's quite masculine. My underarms aren't the worst thing at the gym.
It's kind of like the Hoover Dam from our armpits, I guess.
Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant. Tough on sweat, not on skin.
What makes a Pella window a Pella window? Testing designs in wind-driven rain while offering distinctive looks. Testing beyond standards with style beyond the ordinary. Pella windows and doors. Perfectly beautiful.
Hi, Terry Hall here. It's spring. When you're thinking of selling your home, start with figuring out what it's worth and what you can do to increase its value. My average days on the market for selling a home is less than 20 days. That's right. Your home sold in 20 days or less for the most amount of money. I've been helping people sell their home for 30 years. Let's start by meeting, going over what to do to get you the most money in the shortest time. Call me at 314-220-0524. That's 220-0524 or email me at info@terryhall.net. That's info@terryhall.net.
I'd rather you go and get your hat, leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-patter and that happy tune is your step? Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade, but I'm not afraid. This rover,
thank God it's Friday,
crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
Welcome to the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the Afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, your 20% host, giving 100% of the effort. And joined, of course, by Ian and Dan and Tim. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi, Paul.
Doing fine.
Hi, Paul.
Oh, I think that was nice that Dan and Ian let Tim go first today with the hi, Paul, because it is his birthday.
It is.
And it's a round number birthday.
70?
It's an even number.
You look pretty bad, Tim.
Thank you. I'm getting it from all ends today. McGraw, you.
I think you look fine.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. That, by the way, what I just said, that's in lieu of a gift.
Right.
I'll take it.
Oh, well, in that case, Tim, you look great.
Who gets gifts?
Too late, Dan.
No. My birthday's coming up in a couple of weeks. Dan's birthday is coming up a couple of weeks after that. My daughter asked me last night, Dad, what do you want for your birthday?
Oh, wow. My daughter does that, too.
And what do you say?
Nothing.
Yeah, I know you have no money.
I know.
Don't spend any of it on me. There's nothing I need that I want you to get for me. Here's what I said. Ever since she was a little kid, and you probably will find this out with Archie, Ian, when he starts doing this, the homemade card.
Oh, yeah, that's the best.
Yeah.
My daughter still makes me homemade cards.
So does mine.
For Father's Day and my birthday.
Yeah.
And that's...
The bestest dad ever.
You know, I know.
That kind of a message. That's all I care about.
I'm just okay with a phone call.
Don't waste money on paper.
You know what? I'd be happy with a homemade text message. Really, I am that low maintenance. I don't need anything at all. Here's how you know you're from St. Louis. It's 90 degrees outside, and you say, whew, glad that hot spell's over.
Yeah, really.
A reprieve.
That's what I said yesterday. Somebody goes, there's a cool front coming in? Like, that's what's going to bring it down to 95.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, there's supposed to be a northwest wind coming in with the cool front.
Okay.
And it's supposed to drop the temperatures even more.
Good.
Like later on tonight.
Good, as long as it doesn't bring rain.
No,
oh,
not supposed to. We already had rain.
Oh, speaking of rain. You may remember me talking a few weeks ago when we had three straight devastating days of rain in this town, that our basement had become a crisis zone because there was water down there in the finished area of our basement.
And you went down there and you said, "Hey, honey, the basement's got water in it again."
Yes, that's right. Exactly. That was actual audio. That wasn't Dan doing that. Right. That was actual audio of me in my basement. A year and a half ago, we'd had this same problem during a storm, and we had some furniture down there that had been destroyed. I mean, we had like 4 inches of water down there, and some furniture got destroyed, and the carpeting down there completely destroyed. So we had to tear everything out, and then we had new carpet put in, and then this spring, the same problem happened again. And so this time, I called the carpet guy, and I said, "Listen, do me a favor. Come over to the house and just cut away this part of the carpet. Just leave the concrete floor. We won't put anything down there. Just edge it there so nobody trips over it. And by the way, since my daughter's out of the house, it's just me and my wife. We don't go down to the basement."
Yeah.
It used to be kind of her playroom. We're almost never down there.
You don't want a tile right there?
No, I didn't want to do anything. The reason being, I thought this was going to keep happening every time we got a bad rain.
Yeah.
So my friend Bill, who you guys all met, was in town last weekend, and I took him to the Cardinals game on Saturday. And we had a very nice time while he was here, but he slept in the bed in the basement. And the day before he got there, I kind of went down and made sure, okay, are there towels down here? Is there soap in the bathroom down here? All that sort of stuff. And then he shows up the next day, and we go down there, and I'm showing him. It's like, where did this water come from?
Oh, no.
It hasn't been raining. Where? What? See, my concern was that we had a crack in the foundation. And I'd even called a company that specializes in that, and the guy had come out to my house and he said, "I don't think you have a crack in the foundation. It may be leaking in from the walls, and it's coming to this point, which is the lowest part of your house. That's, you know, gravity just brings the water there, but it's not a crack in your foundation. I would bet on that." And so I was at a loss as to what to do. He said, "You know, if it happens again, let me know." Well, now we had water, and there was no rain that could have created it, and I thought, oh no, now I'm thinking it's the sprinklers. The hoses, the faucets outside, they're leaking inside the house in the wall somewhere. Oh, my. So then I go around into the area where the furnace and the water heater are. And by the way, I refuse to say hot water heater because you don't need to heat hot water. It's just the water heater. I go in there and, you know, we've got that French drain in the base in the ground there, in the floor, right next to the HVAC unit where that drains off and it goes into this drain. And I go over and I notice the water is all the way up to the top and is leaking out and it's going under the wall into the finished area of the basement.
The drain was not draining?
Correct.
Let's sing it, Dan, and up from the ground, come on.
Bubbling crew.
Yeah. Was not Texas tea.
Right.
No.
Fortunately, it wasn't sewage either. Right. It was just water that wasn't draining out of the house. You know, the air conditioner, because in this heat, it's been working 24/7 really, really hard to keep a decent temperature in the rest of the house. And it's dripping water because an air conditioner is a dehumidifier. And that water has to go somewhere, so it's supposed to go down that drain, but it wasn't going down that drain. And when I saw that, I was actually relieved because I knew I had a solution.
Guy with a snake?
Yes. I actually asked him if I could mention his name on the air. Not in exchange for doing the work. Not, I didn't want to give him free advertising in exchange for the work, just because I wanted to praise him so much. And he said, "Please don't. I have so much work already." He's a one-man band. He does it all around. He drives around in his van. He doesn't even have the name of his company and his phone number on the side of his van.
Wow.
Because he says, "We tried that, and too many people called me. I can only work so many hours in the day." And so he came over to the house at like 6:30. In between, he had 4 other jobs to get to, but we were on the way from job A, or probably job M, to job S. He has such a busy day. He stopped by the house. He brings the thing in, snakes that sucker out. Now the water's flowing again.
It's pretty good.
Oh, man, what a relief that it's not the foundation or it's not inside the walls or anything like that.
Oh.
So good. Oh.
We had that.
I turned really relieved.
I turned to my wife after I left. I said, "We probably just saved $10,000 in finding out what the hell was going on here."
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to write the guy a check for $130.
We had that happen, and I will tell everyone out there that this actually does happen, that we had to have it snaked, and the guy that came in said, I asked him if it was tree roots, because tree roots can be a huge issue.
Oh.
And have your whole front yard dug up and everything, and new pipes put in, and but it wasn't tree roots. I was afraid of tree roots.
Mm-hmm.
What it was,
I think we're all afraid of tree roots.
Yeah.
What it ended up being was years of flushing Playtex pontoons.
Oh, really?
Yes. And from when we were there, and from when the previous people were there, whatever, just years of flushing that down. So don't. To all the women out there,
yeah,
if you
the
want
men.
To save that drain, maybe, yeah,
maybe.
And the men.
You never know.
Yeah, yeah, the men, sure. Yeah. Do not flush the pontoons or maxi buckets
well,
down there.
We learned from having the same guy come and snake out our sink drain, which is why I still had his magnet on my refrigerator so I could call him a couple of days ago. We learned the stuff you're not supposed to put down your sink, even if you've got the insinkerator garbage disposal system.
Uh-huh.
Old pasta, old rice, anything that absorbs water goes down into that.
Oh, yeah.
And gets stuck in there and starts backing up.
And it will expand then.
And so when he came, you know, we had to get all the stuff out of the cabinet and under the sink. And he came and he opened that up and he said, you guys eat a lot of pasta and rice, don't you? I said, how do you know that? He said, because it's in here. It's right funny. In there. Yeah.
Wow.
Speaking of water, one of the other things I did with my friend Bill when he was here last weekend was take him to the Gateway Geyser. Any of you ever been to the Gateway Geyser?
No.
No.
You probably have seen it from the plane.
I wrote to you last week. I said, we got to the point where we didn't even notice it anymore.
The Gateway,
it's awesome.
The Gateway Geyser is one of those things in the St. Louis area that I would bet you 90% of the people in the area have no idea what it is.
Right.
I bet you're right.
It's in East St. Louis. Now, don't let that scare you. It is a fountain in a park right on the Mississippi River, and at 12 o'clock and at 6 o'clock and at 9 p.m., 12, 6, and 9 p.m., it puts on a little water show. First, it starts with four fountains. It's a man-made lake, and it starts with four fountains around the edge that blow water probably 200 feet up into the air. And then after you watch that for a couple of minutes, the one in the middle goes, and it spews its stream 630 feet in the air. That is almost as high as the arch.
Yeah.
And it is something to see. And it lasts about 10 minutes, and then it just calms down. Here's how I know no one in the area knows about it. We were there on a cloudless, sunny Saturday at noon. There were 8 other people there.
Wow.
Yeah, I have. You know what? I've never heard of it.
I've seen it before from the Missouri side of the river before, but not really knowing what it was, you know, that it has regular times that it goes off and everything.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem with it. If you go to find it on your own, you're not going to, because there are no signs directing you to the Gateway Geyser.
Oh.
You get off the Eads Bridge,
yeah.
And they have the directions on the website. Go to the website for the Gateway Geyser. It even says your GPS won't find this.
Really?
Here are the directions. Follow these directions. And we followed them, and we got there. But here's the problem. You get to the park, and I'll get to the other part of the park in just a second. You get to the park, and there's nothing saying, park here for the geyser. So we drove all the way through the parking lot, and we got to the other end, and there are, you know, like a half a dozen other people there. Excuse me, do you know where the geyser is? Yeah, it's down there near the lake. What lake? we didn't see a lake when we pulled in. There are no signs telling you where to go.
That's crazy.
So they need to do something about that, because it's a great tourist attraction. And here's what makes it even better. At the other side of the park, the part that's right on the Mississippi River, they have a four-story high tower, which you can walk up. It's ramps that go up four stories. And at the top of that tower, you have the best view of the St. Louis skyline. This must be where, whenever we have national baseball, hockey, or in the old days, football coverage, when they were broadcasting a national game from here, that's where they must have put their cameras.
Oh, I'll bet you they do.
Because it looks right at the old courthouse, and you can see the arch and the river and the whole skyline there, which you could not see from the Mississippi side because the buildings are in the way. Now, you have to get close enough so that you get past the Cargill grain elevator, which kind of blocks the view a little bit. But once you get up on that tower, it is a photographic paradise.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
When you're at the top of that ramp, now you have to take it that I haven't been over there on the ground. We've flown over there for 13 years.
Yeah.
We've seen this.
Yeah.
There's benches on the top, right?
There is, yeah, a small bench.
Is there a statue of somebody sitting?
Yes.
Oh, there it is. I never knew that. What is it?
It's a guy named Malcolm Martin, who I think may have been a state senator or some politician from East St. Louis.
Okay.
And it's actually the whole park is named after him, and it's a statue of him sitting there. And I read online that they have a webcam up there. And so when I got to the top and I walked up and I saw this statue of him sitting there, I thought, oh, they've got it embedded in one of his eyes. And I'm looking.
Yeah.
And then out of the corner of my eye, I realized, no, there's a big pole over there with a webcam on it, you idiot. And they actually call it the arch cam because it's a beautiful picture. You can go online right now and see it. It's on 24/7, so you get to see it at night, too, when the park is closed. It's a really, really beautiful view of the St. Louis skyline that, again, only people from Illinois get to see when they come across the Poplar Street Bridge.
Well, maybe since they signed a new budget, they'll put signs up now over in Illinois.
True.
I think that's right below the lottery on Illinois.
Probably. they need traffic cameras over there first.
Yeah.
No, you know, that and you can, just like the arch, when that thing goes off, you could be out in St. Peter's. And when that thing goes off, you can see it on the other side of the arch. I mean, you can see the arch from everywhere when you're in the air. And when that thing goes off, you can see, real faintly, you can see the geyser shooting.
Yeah.
It is awesome. From the air, it's really awesome.
I'm not saying you're ever going to spend more than 30 to 40 minutes in that park. But if you could time it that you get there just before noon and you see the geyser go off and then you walk to the other end of the park and go up the ramp and take a look at the view, take some pictures of it, it's really beautiful. That's again, one of those hidden gems that I didn't even know about until a friend of mine mentioned it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. I'm surprised they don't have it go off at 3 o'clock, too. Noon, 3, 6, and 9, and then that's it.
Yeah.
But it's noon, 6 o'clock.
You'd think it could go off at 3 o'clock to announce the beginning of this show.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It blows water, we blow hard. Same thing.
That's right. Hello, everybody.
Same concept. Then the other thing I want to mention here before we get going is that this weekend is National Ice Cream Day. It's on Sunday. Now, if you're from my family, every day that ends in Y is National Ice Cream Day.
Oh, yeah.
But I saw this online today in an article about National Ice Cream Day. There is a place in Los Angeles called the Dessert Bar. And there's a chef at the Dessert Bar named Barb Batiste, who's come up with a new ice cream treat. It is an ice cream-filled glazed donut.
Mm.
This is for people who have always wanted to have diabetes,
yes,
but just didn't know how to do it.
Wow.
This is what you do. The bakery puts a scoop of ice cream, vanilla, mint chocolate chip, cookies and cream, Rocky Road, or chocolate malted crunch inside a glazed donut, and then they seal it with a warm press. So the ice cream stays inside, doesn't melt.
Wow.
I don't know how that works. I don't understand physics. I don't know how you can warm something and not melt the ice cream. But they warm up the donut, and the ice cream's inside, and so you take a bite of that. And, oh, I'm actually in glucose shock just talking about it. $5 for that.
Donut.
Ice cream donut.
Yeah, ice cream donuts.
They say it's hot outside, cold inside, and yummy all over. Sign me up.
Right.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to introduce you to a guy named Mark Malkoff, who was a big Johnny Carson fan. And this year marks the 25th anniversary of Carson retiring from The Tonight Show. Mark runs something called The Carson Podcast, where he talks to people who were big enough stars to get on The Carson Show or work on The Carson Show behind the scenes. And he has some great stories to share when we come back here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
And we're going to look at traffic right now with Timothy Weiland, the birthday boy.
Hey, thank you, Dan.
Well, they just moved an accident out of a lane off to the right shoulder on southbound Highway 270 at Big Bend, and that was just enough to jam things up back to Page. You do have another accident on westbound Highway 40 at Highway Highway 364. Another accident, northbound 170, just before Highway 270. Now, that doesn't look like it's backing up too bad. Maybe about to Airport Road, but that's things are on the move. Eastbound 40 downtown is already backed up from Compton to the Poplar Street Bridge. And on westbound 40, drivers slowing from Kings Highway through McCausland. This traffic report brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Sure, robots help build cars, but it takes human hands to keep them running right. And there are no better hands than those of the 4,000 ASE certified technicians at Firestone Complete Auto Care. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone. I'm Tim Weiland for the Big 550 KTRS Traffic Desk.
Come out of the dark, grab your phone, and text KTRS to 84126 to get the latest news updates, to get the latest sports updates. And of course, you can text your questions, comments, and try to win some really neat stuff. The KTRS text line. Your connection to us and our connection to you on the Big 550 KTRS.
Hey, fellow St. Louisans, do you want to put chunks of money in your bank account by flipping houses right here in St. Louis? If so, I have a must-attend free educational event for you. I'm looking for a handful of folks that want to learn real estate investing right here in St. Louis. You're going to learn flipping, rentals, and wholesaling properties for profits. Hi, my name is Nick Bauer, host of the Freedom Investing Lifestyle, heard right here on the Big 550. And I'm looking for a small group of people that want to learn my secrets for consistently making big profits, flipping, and wholesaling properties in the greater St. Louis area without using any of my own money. St. Louis is a great market, and investors are coming from all over the country to invest here in St. Louis. And I want to teach you how to identify these deals that they're looking for and profit yourself in a free 90-minute educational workshop. We're holding just a few of these workshops, and spaces are limited, so please go to discoverrealestateinvesting.com and save your seat now. That's discoverrealestateinvesting.com. Don't miss out. Save your seat right now at discoverrealestateinvesting.com.
If you or someone you love is suffering from hearing loss, please stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of an affordable hearing solution called MD Hearing Aid. MD Hearing Aid is rigorously tested by audiologists, doctor designed, and FDA registered. The MD Hearing Aid delivers excellent hearing improvement while saving you more than 80% off the average price of a traditional hearing aid. And you can try it for 45 days risk-free with a 100% money-back guarantee by calling 1-800-300-9917. MD Hearing Aid is a medical-grade hearing aid that's so discreet, people may not even notice when you're wearing it. MD Hearing Aid lets you hear what you've been missing without the hassle of doctor's visits and expensive and time-consuming fitting appointments. So again, if you or someone you love is suffering from hearing loss, please give yourself this life-changing in-home trial. Try MD Hearing Aid risk-free for 45 days with a 100% money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-300-9917. Plus, you'll get free shipping and free batteries for a year. 1-800-300-9917.
Hi, I'm John Grayson for Premier Heating and Cooling. Now is the best time for you to give them a call at 636-916-1122, because as we get out of the cooler weather and into the hot weather, you want to make sure that your cooling system is ready to handle the task. Have Premier Heating and Cooling come out and give you a checkup. They are the most experienced and oldest American Standard customer care dealer in the St. Louis and St. Charles area. They work on and maintain every major brand of heating and cooling products. Their certified factory-trained technicians are all fully licensed and insured and ready to do the job. They've been servicing the St. Louis and St. Charles area for many, many years, 25 years of experience in residential and commercial HVAC. And not only are they A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, but most of their business at Premier Heating and Cooling comes from people who were referred by family members or friends. Whether your needs are residential and they'll sit down and talk with you about the best plan for your system, or you're working with a commercial system, there is only one number to know, 636-916-1122. That's where you find Premier Heating and Cooling.
Oftentimes people ask me, why Menino's Market in Cotterville? Well, I'll tell you, the quality food, better prices than the chain stores, homemade pies, homemade bread, homemade sausages, homemade brats, best grade of meat, custom order your meat from the butcher on site, local produce from area farmers, great customer service, and if you're planning a barbecue, the place you want to go, Menino's. Just some of the reasons why I go there almost every day. Menino's Market in Cotterville, meninosmarket.com.
Hey, St. Louis, this is AJ Cochran, center back for St. Louis FC. Join us in a worldwide technology soccer park as we represent our city against some of the best soccer talent in the country.
Make plans now and get your tickets as St. Louis FC will battle the conference rivals, the Charleston Battery, on Saturday, July 15th, and Louisville City FC on Saturday, July 22nd. Be a part of the action and excitement of professional soccer in St. Louis. It's time to pack the house at Worldwide Technology Soccer Park and Toyota Stadium. For more information or to get your tickets, go to stlouisfc.com.
Looking for that great family restaurant on the hill with some great Italian food? Look no further. Mama's on the Hill. Lance and Andrea continue that tradition on the hill of family-style restaurants. Great for catering either off-site or on-site. They have a great banquet right there, Mama's on the Hill. Book your graduation party or any special event. Mama's on the Hill at the corner of Edwards and Bischoff. And yes, that's where toasted ravioli was invented. Go in and hear the story and get great food. Mama's on the Hill or mamasonthehill.com.
Here's a business you can own and make lots of money. Shack Shine's a house detailing service that power washes driveways, sidewalks, and a whole lot more. Check out Shack Shine at americasmallbusiness.com.
Weekday mornings at 6:35, Scott Crothers from Stifel Nicolaus with insights on the markets and investing. And for your own personal financial review, call him at 314-292-6201 and listen weekday mornings at 6:35 here on the Big 550 KTRS.
That sounds odd.
Like a harpsichord or something.
Sounds like a Muzak-y kind of version of the Johnny Carson Tonight Show theme, right?
Lawrence Welk, maybe?
No, what this is the Johnny Carson theme before it became the Johnny Carson theme. This was written by Paul Anka, who later took the music from his own song and made it into the Carson theme. This is called Toot Sweet, It's Really Love, a song that Paul Anka wrote in 1959 for Annette Funicello.
Wow.
And it was recorded by Tootie's Trumpets and the Camerata Strings in 1960 as this instrumental.
Yeah.
And it has the exact same thematic sound as Johnny Carson's theme. And it became that when Anka changed it a couple of years later. But this was the original version.
I did not know that.
And I play it today to introduce our next guest. His name is Mark Malkoff, who's a comedian and a podcaster. He's the man behind the Carson Podcast. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Have you heard that before?
Have I heard about Paul Anka and about how he wrote the song?
Yeah.
I did. I actually got together with Paul Anka at his home in California, and we talked about everything, and he was making something like $400,000 residuals on that Johnny's theme, and Johnny actually was given co-author credit for not doing anything. Anka said it was better to get half of something than nothing. Anka was a smart businessman, but him and Carson were making $400,000. Estimated on annually on that theme song.
Now, you don't have to share royalties on the Carson Podcast with his estate, do you?
Thank goodness, no, because not making any money. So, yeah.
What you are doing is you're making a great show, and I've enjoyed many of the episodes.
Oh, thanks.
The Carson Podcast is a celebration of a TV show that went off the air 25 years ago after being on the air for 30 years. This year marks the 25th anniversary of it leaving the air. You bring in people who had been on the show or had worked on the show, and for those who had been on the show, you get into the real specifics of the shows that they appeared on, like the first time somebody was on.
Exactly.
Now, we know that Antenna TV is carrying Carson reruns. I have AT&T UVerse, so I don't have it. But Dan watches it like every night, don't you?
I get to get it. Oh, yeah, I watch Carson every night.
So, I mean, obviously, that's not on your schedule. So how do you go back and find the archives of whoever your guest is going to be?
A lot of it's on YouTube. Sometimes I go to the Paley Center, the Museum of TV and Radio here in New York, and they have a lot of stuff as well. Johnny Carson's nephew, Jeff Sussing, who runs Carson Entertainment Group, has been very helpful with giving me access as well. So, I mean, that's a really good point, is that even on Antenna TV, they take out the musical guests because they don't want to, that's just so expensive. So they take out the music guest. So I'm going to be interviewing a musician coming up soon. So Yeah, it's hard to find certain clips, and anything pre-1972, almost all of it was erased. So there's definitely certain people I talk to that we just I can find kinescopes here and there, but definitely certain clips are long gone, which is sad.
It is really sad that NBC erased the first 10 years of Johnny Carson's Tonight Show because it was on videotape that they wanted to reuse for game shows.
Oh.
I talked to the guy unofficially. I don't know if he'll come on my podcast, but there's a gentleman who still works at NBC who was one of the two people that wiped all the tapes. He said it was terrible. He said he didn't want to do it, but he just got hired at NBC, and they made him in New Jersey erase. He spent the summer erasing that and some other NBC show, and he said it was horrible. But it was, I guess, for NBC, it was like $500 a tape, which is a lot of money.
NBC can't afford the $500 per tape. He only made $18 billion from Carson.
Yes. Sorry, Boris Karloff, take that. Judy Garland, take that. It's crazy.
How about the very first show? There's no tape of the first show with Groucho Marx introducing Johnny and a guest roster that included Mel Brooks
and Tony Bennett and Rudy Valley and Joan Crawford. There's audio that exists. There's still photographs that exist, but the actual footage doesn't. The earliest kinescope footage I think I was able to find was either late 63 or maybe early 64. That there's a I think it was New Year's Eve, maybe 64. It's like Woody Allen and Louise Lasser, who he was about to get married to or just got married to. I was able to locate something recently. But there are collectors that have kinescopes that stuff pops up, and it's like this lost treasure. But for the most part, you know, Ed Ames, Johnny Carson and his brilliance, when Ed Ames did the tomahawk toss, Johnny had a kinescope made of just that clip, and he put it in his desk drawer and his brilliance, but the rest of the episode was lost. But yeah, occasionally there were clips.
Did you have Mel Brooks on the Carson podcast?
I did. I went to his office in Culver City, and he does very, very few interviews. The only reason he said yes, he told me later, is because I was just with Carl Reiner, and Carl told him he should do it, because I was trying to get Mel Brooks, and I couldn't get him.
Yeah.
So, he was great. I mean, he was on the very first show. He went on with Johnny quite a lot. And like a lot of people, they all say Carson was the best.
What did he tell you about what that night was like? Was Carson nervous? I mean, how did the show go? In those days, by the way, it was 105 minutes long.
Well, the show actually started, it was an hour and 45, and the first 15 minutes would usually Ed and Skitch Henderson. And then Johnny protested and wouldn't go on. They wanted him to go on the first 15 minutes, and then I think in 1980 or 1981, it went down to 60 minutes, but it was a long. You're right. It was very, very long. Mel Brooks said that the show went well. He was, you know, this young hotshot comedy writer, and he basically resorted to, went into his, like, Borscht Belt shtick thing, and he got on top of Johnny's desk at one point doing a bit, and I think he was making fun of Tony Bennett. Mel Brooks told me that Tony Bennett was actually upset at him because he was, you know, mocking, singing like Tony Bennett and doing high notes. But, yeah, he said it went great. You know, Groucho, you know, did an amazing 15 minutes. Mel Brooks said, if anything, he just wanted Groucho's autograph. He was that so excited just to be there with Groucho. But I think Carson was very, very smart to have Groucho, you know, have somebody that everybody accepts that loves, because introduce him. Because as Carson says, I mean, the acceptance with the audience is a huge thing. And even though he was a game show host, doing late night and taking over for Jack Parr, who was one of the most beloved figures in television history, it was tough. It took Johnny, everybody says it took him at least a month, if not more, to really get his footing. And there were definitely people that didn't think he was going to make it.
When the show was an hour 45 and then an hour and a half, before it got cut down to an hour, that last half hour quite often featured interesting interviews that Johnny did with people who weren't necessarily funny. You know, authors.
It was Gore Vidal. It was people, you know, it was a lot of authors. And he loved having Carl Sagan on. Carl Sagan and Jim Fowler were two guests that he would have dinner with. Usually he would not go out to, he wouldn't socialize with the guests after the show, but the intellectual people, those two in particular, he would almost always have dinner with after the show. He wouldn't want to talk show business with anybody. It would always be, you know, he was into astronomy, he was into conservationism. So, but yeah, you're right. That last half hour was like your Buck Henry. It was Phyllis Newman. It was more authors and intellectuals and humorists.
People who do not appear on late night television ever now.
Never, never. It was a very different show. And I think Dick Cavett told me Johnny regretted it. I've heard it from other people that Carson ultimately regretted the show going down to 60 minutes. He thought it would pick up the pace, which it did pick up the pace, but it definitely lost. It lost something in terms of the bookings and in terms of what the show was. But I get that Johnny was tired. He definitely had a lot of guest hosts come in for him. And, he definitely put in his time. I mean, he lasted more than 29 and a half years as number one. No one even came close to giving him serious competition.
What about the Arsenio Hall years? That definitely put a dent in him, particularly with younger demographics, didn't it?
It did. I mean, somewhat. I mean, Johnny was still, I believe he was still number one. But, I mean, it was a different, from what I've heard and what I've read, it was a different, a lot of different, it was a much different audience. But it definitely, Johnny sensed that the tide was turning in terms of there was going to be all this more competition and cable. Everyone always said Carson had perfect timing on for everything, and he knew when to get out, and I think he got out at the right time. I mean, Arsenio was booking musical guests that Johnny never would have. I mean, Johnny's whole thing was, we have a very distinct type of music, and anything that wasn't that, they wouldn't book. I think David Geffen, after Johnny Carson retired, took out like a full ad in Variety or one of the trades, saying about how Carson and the Tonight Show just damaged music for so many years, especially like rock music, I think, in particular, because he wouldn't book those acts. I think they would have to go to on Dave Letterman at 12:30. So, yeah, I think you're right with Arsenio and other perceived competition, that is one of the factors of Johnny leaving. That and the Saturday Night Live sketches with Dana Carvey playing Johnny Carson really bothered Johnny. He did not want to be perceived as sticking around too long. He didn't want to be perceived as being someone like Bob Hope. And he basically said, if they're going to make fun of me, I'm leaving.
Those skits with Carvey as Carson and Phil Hartman as a buffoonish Ed McMahon were great. And how about the night Dana Carvey did Carsenio, which was a mashup of Carson and Arsenio with the haircuts? Yeah, that was hysterical. And I can imagine how, if you're the person who's being made fun of there, Arsenio Hall, okay, you take it. Johnny Carson, you hate it.
I thought the same thing you did, and I talked to Robert Smigel, who wrote the sketch, and Johnny was upset at his sketches, but that one, Johnny, actually, it didn't bother him because he thought that they were making fun of Arsenio a little bit more than him, so he was okay. But there was one sketch in particular. I mean, there were a bunch that Johnny was really bothered about. I thought the Carsenio thing was really funny and clever, but there were a bunch of them. Dana Carvey said that Jay Leno told him that after one of those sketches aired, that Johnny was walking through the hall at NBC Burbank and said, if they're going to make fun of me, I'm leaving.
Wow.
And that was one of those things where, again, he just did not want to be perceived as sticking around too long like Bob Hope. Even his idol, Jack Benny, he thought stuck around too long. And Johnny prided himself at his timing, and he got off stage on May 22nd, 92. I think he was like 66 years old, and he never came back. I mean, he was offered anything he ever wanted to do, and he definitely considered options, but I think he made two cameos on Letterman,
right,
unannounced, and I don't think he said anything on either, and he did this Simpsons, and then he did Bob Hope's, I think, 90th birthday. That was the final time he ever did a monologue. That was a year after I think he retired, but I believe that's it. I mean, he wrote a small piece, I think, for The New Yorker that I think Steve Martin helped get in. And that's it. I mean, he loved going on his boat, the Serengeti, his yacht. He would go to Africa with Bob Wright and Jim Fowler. He would still play his poker game with Steve Martin and Carl Reiner. But he was taking magic classes. He was getting together with his former writers in Santa Monica underneath his office. Arnold Schwarzenegger owned a restaurant called Shotzi's. He was definitely still social. He just was not. He was officially retired from show business, and America definitely missed him. But he basically said, I mean, wherever he went, people said, we missed you. And he said, you can't do better than that.
I couldn't help but smiling, Mark, when you said that Steve Martin helped Johnny Carson get something into a magazine.
Yeah, I know.
Really? Johnny Carson could just call up and say, hey, I'm faxing this over to you right now. Okay, you're in, Mr. Carson.
It's funny that you say that because I guess Steve Martin's so plugged in with the New Yorker. And I just think Johnny said, I don't even know how to really get it in. But, of course, anything that Johnny wrote, they were like little kids, so excited. And then, I mean, I neglected to also mention Johnny anonymously was faxing and sending in jokes to Dave Letterman, who was doing monologue jokes, and Johnny, again, was like a little kid, so excited to stay up and watch Dave deliver his jokes. And apparently, a lot of times when Dave would anonymously do a Johnny joke, he would do like the golf swing, just kind of like a subtle golf swing just for Johnny. And it was a wonderful, wonderful thing that this, and Dave would send Johnny checks for each joke, and Johnny would cash them and write something really kind of like a smart aleck thing in the comments when he would cash them. And it was a great thing that I think that Dave and Johnny had that relationship, and that Johnny, up until I believe he passed, was writing those jokes.
Yeah, in fact, when he did die, Letterman did an entire monologue of Carson-written jokes, which was nice. Now, Mark, you've had a lot of comedians on your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Every comedian who ever appeared on that show remembers their first time through the colored curtain, right?
It's true. I mean, it's the biggest thing in show business. I mean, I haven't talked to Jerry Seinfeld, but he says it's still the biggest moment in his career was going on Carson when he debuted. It was the gold standard. Tom Dreesen said, you know, back then, if you were a comedian, the first thing out of the public's mouth was like, oh, yeah, have you been on Johnny Carson? And to the public, to entertainment, if you did not go on that show, you were not a real comedian in America's eye, in the entertainment industry's eye. And it was the biggest deal. And when I talk to these people, I can see it on their faces. They're reliving it in front of me. And the detail that they remember from their debut, from being backstage to being standing up backstage before Johnny introduced them, it's unreal to listen to these stories.
You mentioned Jeff Sotzing before, Carson's nephew, who kind of runs the Carson empire, and he's in charge of the archives of Carson tapes that are in a salt mine in Kansas, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. He has done a masterful job of repackaging this stuff, first on VHS and then on DVD, and now you can see it on antenna TV. Mm-hmm. Dick Cavett has also gone back and found archives of his stuff and put it out in various forms. Why don't we see any of that from David Letterman?
The NBC show is still owned by Dave's Late Night with David Letterman is owned by NBC. They put it out on Shrio, which was a cable station for a while, and that was wonderful. Dave owns the CBS show, so I had heard things from people internally that at one point they were going to release DVDs. This was like 10 years ago, and at the last minute, they changed their mind. I don't know. I mean, Dave could do what Johnny did and put out DVDs or do something digitally. I just don't know. That's a question for Dave, but I think he has zero interest in his show. And I mean, he could make a lot of money, but Dave's never been really driven by money like that. I don't know if we'll ever see those clips. I mean, I'd be surprised if Dave does anything with them. I wish he did. I mean, the amount of people during that 23 years that he was on CBS, the guests that went by, it was some of the biggest people in music and entertainment. I hope that he does something with it.
All right, here's the last thing I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
I talked to Cliff Nesteroff, the comedy historian, recently, and I asked him if he thinks that comedy on television, particularly late-night comedy, and you worked on the Colbert Report, so you know a little bit about this. I asked him if he thinks that late-night comedians, with their monologues and even with things like The Daily Show and the Colbert Report, have had any political impact. And he said he doesn't think they did at all. Talk about that in terms of Carson in particular, because he was the guy doing the nightly monologue that America tuned in to see.
Johnny was never took a political side ever. I mean, if something was out there like Watergate, he would make jokes about it. But Johnny was a liberal privately, but nobody knew that. People, journalists and critics would give him a hard time all the time, and he would say, "Tell me the last time Bob Hope or Jack Benny took a political stance." And he definitely would go after people. And Peter LaSalle, who's Johnny's lifetime producer, basically said if Johnny went out, did go after you, you were finished. And but he definitely was very, very careful not to put to voice his politics. I agree with Cliff. I mean, I really do with the current climate. I mean, it's definitely gotten the ratings up with our current political climate, and definitely Stephen Colbert is doing. I mean, I mean his show has definitely grown because of what we're going through and stuff. But I think that's almost a result of the election. But I really don't think it had. I agree with Cliff. I don't think that it resulted in an election. I really don't. But it's definitely these current shows are definitely benefiting in terms of the material that they get to do every night.
If you want to hear some great memories from the people who were there in the 30 years that Johnny Carson was the host of The Tonight Show, you got to download this podcast or go to the website, carsonpodcast.com. That's the URL?
Yeah, carsonpodcast.com. Yeah. Yeah, we have some good episodes, great episodes coming up. I just interviewed a gentleman who's in his 90s who was Johnny Carson's stage manager on Carson's Cellar and Carson's Corner. Johnny arrived to Los Angeles, I think, in 1950 or 1951. He was, like, in his mid-20s, and it was his first
Angeles
show. And the gentleman was Johnny's stage manager, and it's incredible to hear somebody that was with him when he was that young.
All right, that's the kind of stuff you get on the Carson podcast. It's hosted by this gentleman right here, Mark Malkoff. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, yeah, it was great talking to you. Thanks for asking me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
And it's time to look at traffic right now with Tim Wiley.
The usual slowdowns on westbound Highway 40, Kings Highway through McCausland. A little sluggish as you go through Chesterfield Valley, but you had an accident at Lake St. Louis Boulevard. They moved it off to the right shoulder, but you're going to be running slow from Highway 94 all the way out through Lake St. Louis. Westbound Highway 70 running slow past the airport, again around Zumba. Stop and go from Highway A through Wentzville Parkway. That earlier accident, southbound Highway 270 at Big Bend, off on the shoulder. Jam up from Page through Doherty Ferry. Slow pockets from Doherty Ferry through a little bit south of Graboy. And eastbound 270 now, we're slowing McDonald through 170. This traffic report brought to you by Staples. It is your office away from your office with everything you need to print, scan, or fax. Access files from a USB, email, or the cloud, and use self-serve machines to get back to business. Staples, it's pro time. I'm Tim Weiland from the Big 550 KTRS Traffic Desk.
We're St. Louis's biggest conversation. The Big 550 KTRS. KTRS.
M&M Golf Cars is celebrating. And why, you ask? Well, because they're opening their fifth location, and right now is the time to buy that golf car that you've always been dreaming about. Experience the best in personal transportation vehicles with the new Onward line from Club Car. You'll love the Onward's dynamic stability and handling, superior comfort, and the way you can customize them to fit your lifestyle. M&M Golf Cars is located at 131 North Central Drive in O'Fallon, Missouri. Online at mmgolfcars.com.
All Shook Up, featuring Elvis Presley's chart-topping hit, live at the Muni now through the 19th. Sponsored by U.S. Bank. Tickets available at muni.org or at the Muni box office.
There's only one place to hear the best when it comes to news. ABC Radio News. The Edward R. Murrow winner for overall excellence is heard exclusively on the Big 550. KTRS.